Blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityambi Tatyambi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityambi Tatyambi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sattham Saranam Gacchami, Dityambi Tatyambi Sabaha. I turn to the Holy Order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraints and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 brave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry to correct dhamma. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyam bhi tatiyam bhi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, or even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
So for those of you who are new to practice, we have some back jacks in the corner that are available. If you'd like some more back support while you're sitting here in the group. Shall we look at this morning? Renee?
Yeah, I've been looking at my work, at when I'm at work. And so I have a sub-personality who is really, really interested in succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of what's made me successful. So
there's a part of you who likes to work. And that's probably part of you who made you successful.
Right. So I recognize the rewards that it's brought me.
Uh-huh.
But I also am seeing that there's suffering in it, in that sub-personality. So, and there's some passion involved in it. So I have a certain amount of passion in doing a good job.
Uh-huh.
And getting behind the organization I'm working for, and making it successful, making everyone in the organization successful, and just with the values that we've set for that organization, upholding them. And
yeah.
So I can get behind a lot. That I think it's that the personality that's behind that, and then
that's kind of like the thing that motivates her, or that kind of like. She can passionately do that because she knows that those values are in place, and so what a wonderful thing to work for.
Right, right. And I think in every job I have, I need to have something like that, because that's what it seems like. And then when other people don't do that, I get upset about it. And since I'm in a management role, I have the ability to coach people or whatever it takes to get them to do that, or if not, then you can choose to go, or you know, there's different things that can happen.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But what I see, and I'm not, that's where I need the help, is I see someone, or I don't know if it's the same sub-personality or someone different, who sees all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're vigilantly watching for all the issues and problems that could be fixed, that could be obstacles to success.
Uh-huh.
And then I get this sense of urgency that they all have to be fixed at the same time.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah, now that you've seen them, let's get to it.
Or how could that person let that happen? Or there's like this whole thing about it, you know. So
how could that person let that happen? An external person let
something
happen that it doesn't fit in with the values, and so when they're not doing what is fitting in with the values, there's urgency to want to try to fix that, or what can you do about that?
Right. And I'm just saying, as you talk, that I think that somehow it could reflect on me. So if the organization is not doing what it needs to be doing, so then it could reflect back to me, so that's where some of the urgency comes from.
Yeah, well, everybody that is under you, or that you are in a managerial role over, they, whatever they do or don't do, has some kind of reflection on you, whether it be about the organization or about you as a manager.
Right, right. And so it's to the extreme where there's a little bit of content that people look to me for that now. So
look to you for?
For cleaning up messes or
okay.
that kind of thing. So
right, okay. Because you are the organization, right?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so my ego is engaged in that, right? And then, but then there's a lot of suffering over it. So I'm thinking that maybe it's how I get value, you know, or something out of all of that. You know, as a child even, maybe that's where the value was. Or so I'm just seeing it all, just trying to lay it out in some way to get it outside of my head.
Yeah, because inside your head it's just, this is the way it is, and this is what you have to do, and it's all up to you. Would you say that that's what the overall experience is?
Yeah, that is the experience. That it's all up to me. And it's not that there's times where I think other people are as capable, which that's really egotistical. I can see that.
What is that?
That was egotistical. You know, I can see the ego, the ego in that, in terms of not thinking people are as capable as I am to do that, or to find the problem and fix it, or to help other people see the error of their ways or whatever. And yet I have experiences where people are as capable, and I know they are. As a matter of fact, I just had last week someone say to me, well, let me help you with that. And it was sort of like, wow. No, actually.
An unusual concept.
Yeah, because the ego gets a hold of it, and conditioning, and just churns it into this story that I'm the only one that can do it. How come other people don't see this?
Yeah.
You know, what?
Well, that's very clear. So would you say that's where the suffering is? Is that when ego gets you trapped in that world in which it's all up to you, no one else can do this, this is my responsibility, reflects upon me, why can't they get it right? So you have that kind of conversation going on about stuff.
Yeah, and I'm just seeing that it's, then if it's not, if that doesn't happen, it doesn't, and I'm not successful at it, then it reflects on me. And so,
and
the
what
other...
what does that mean, that it reflects on you? Like, what would happen?
Well, I could get fired.
You can get fired.
Or I could just look bad.
You could just look bad.
Yeah, so so that's the other side I'm seeing, is that there's... That's where the motivation is coming from.
The motivation for this work?
For the whole process.
For the whole process.
So just, so I don't look bad.
So you don't look bad. It sounds like part of it is that, for that process, right? That, that what you started off saying was that there's part of you who's, who likes to work and is, and can get really passionate about it when it's, has, you know, it's reflecting values and things like that. So it sounds like there's several drivers, would you say? Like I would project that there's somebody who actually enjoys doing what you do.
Well, I mean, I think the passion is coming from a purer place, you know, from the heart. And I think when I coach people and they get it, and I'm respected as a good leader, and, you know, they learn from me and all of that.
Right.
I think all of that is what I enjoy and why I'm there.
Yes.
And then, you know, from the heart reasons. But then I think the motivation behind the suffering is...
Oh, yeah.
...is the piece where if something's not right, there, even if it's not my area of responsibility, I take responsibility for it.
And how does that happen? That you end up taking responsibility for it, even if it's not your responsibility?
That's part of the process.
That's part of the process.
So it's sort of like that scanner that's scanning for anything that's not right, and it picks it up and says, well, you should have done something about that. Or
You should have done something about that.
Yeah. Like the whole world is on its shoulder, on my shoulders. So, and the other, so there's one side where the whole world's on your shoulders, and the other side where you feel like you could do everything, you know, so, you know, like you could actually make everything happen. It's almost an impossible task. But the conditioned mind thinks it could do everything so that nothing ever went wrong. Like there's something wrong with something being wrong. You know, like illness is not wrong, it's just illness. Or, so if there's something in the organization that's not working correctly, that's what's going to happen.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a completely different viewpoint than there's something not working in the organization, it's all up to me. Oh my God, what am I going to do about
it? It's all my fault.
It's all your fault. You should have seen this. This could have been avoided, or whatever comes through.
Right.
Yeah. Just a different, the same thing is happening, well, one could almost mm-hmm. say. It's just that who's looking out at the world is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a completely different mm-hmm. viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So there's this rushing feeling that mm-hmm. I get when all the problems are identified and I'm supposed to be fixing them and there's no way I ever will. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and in that world, it is really up to you. When someone says, how can I help? It's like, wow, this world, this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like not even... It's like a tilt, you know?
Right. Yeah. So it's helpful to start to dismantle it and look mm-hmm. at it and...
Tease out what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. what part of it is who? I kind of like what you're looking at, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what part of it causes the suffering? What part of it mm-hmm. is kind of just part of what happens in life, and that's how you respond, and...
Mm-hmm.
It's what you're passionate about, like what your heart is involved in.
Last week, you know, I had something happen where a series of problems came to my attention, whether they were problems or not. I don't know if it was the process or there were actually problems there, but potential problems or something that I needed to take care uh-huh. of. And I left and I went to lunch to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And the story was you had to leave. You just had to leave, you know. And then I was thinking on the way over here today, maybe it was okay to leave. Like, it's okay to take a break and just see what's going on
uh-huh.
versus staying in it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's some wisdom in break.
The thing they talked about, let's sleep on it or something like that, so that the same person who is there with the problem, seeing it as a problem, caught up in the urgency mm-hmm. of it, isn't the one who is actually solving it. Kind of like the same mm-hmm. mind that creates it isn't the one who's going to be able to solve it.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at the working meditations at home, there's a lot of breaks.
Mm,
and,
yeah.
you know, there's lots of...
There's lots of meditation. Yeah, a chance to actually, what we call disidentify, get out of the part who's there wrapped up in that whole drama and cannot see the solution, or if they see a solution, sees just... more problems or whatever erupting out of that. And what you're saying is that maybe it's possible to actually take a break and step aside from that. Almost like what you're doing here. It's just instead of being up in your head, mm-hmm. it's now out in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and looking at that, so kind of like what you practice is what you have, mm-hmm. looking at these are all the things going on, and so what could I bring into work to slow it down, take some breaks, look and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sub-personality that I talked about wouldn't want you to take a break.
Well, yeah, well, there's...
Or their conditioning.
Yeah.
The conditioning is talking to that sub-personality or whatever.
Yeah, you're kind of driving the system.
Yeah.
You know, as a part of yourself, a worker is probably really handy to have. It's just that when it gets in the hands of conditioning, it's almost like... That's all you do, and there's no other world other than this, and it's in service to you suffering,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
rather than just being another delightful aspect of yourself who's able to contribute something to the world.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so.
Yeah, it's all really good to see you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Cameron.
I've been looking at a process also, and it started what I'm looking at is what happened after just recently crashing into the cul-de-sac of karma. You know,
uh-huh.
like ending up at a place where boom, I hit right up against, and then I see that I've been in karma and I've been leaving this trail of, you know, like pig pen behind me. And
yep.
The crash is kind of like the first thing I noticed is that there's like all this confusion at first because the person who was doing that really wasn't aware of all of the little crumbs and messes that were being shed behind.
Uh-huh.
She actually was thinking she was, you know, kind of doing okay.
Uh-huh.
So then that's the first step of the process. It's like this confusion, and and being having another perspective brought to it, mm-hmm. so that she sees there's more than what she was seeing. Then so the part of the confusion is, well, gosh, why didn't she see it? How is that being missed? You know, so that's part of it. That's one step. And then I watched it move. Now, this is all very current, just in the past day or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there was just kind of this moving into, from the confusion, into this kind of sadness and disappointment that, oh, no, you know, this is not a new process. This is, you know, we've been here a number of times.
There have been crumbs in your past.
There have been the same trail of crumbs, yes. These are stale crumbs. So then there's kind of this sadness and disappointment, uh-huh. which then slips into this really kind of depression and then despair. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who's just despairing.
Mm-hmm.
And she hears things like, you just don't have the right stuff for spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. You just need to, you know, you're too old. You've been doing this too long. You need to metaphorically go sit in the shade and order a margarita and just make the best out of whatever little crumbs you can get out of life, you know, kind of thing.
Got it.
And no wonder she feels despairing, right, hearing that
yeah,
sort of thing.
That's very encouraging. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, and so then the next step is like somebody sees that
mm-hmm.
and says, hey, wait a minute. You know, I know where that's coming from.
Yeah.
So then there's kind of like starting out of the dip, see? Mm-hmm. Starting out of the dip, and we're starting to get encouraged to look deeper and, you know, mm-hmm. grab a hold of the willingness to if you will, stand up for this person who's had mm-hmm. this crash at the end of the call set.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next step is this person's got to make a plan. She wants to figure out now, she wants to make a plan where, okay, now we know this happens, it's happened over and over again, and uh-huh. somehow or another we're missing it. How can we create a structure that will help her to see it?
That's right.
Basically, to help mm-hmm. her to see it before she ends up in the cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next thing was, the person was, for some reason, led to reread the Sherry's blog that was, I think it was called Two Sentence Rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about how ego wants to make a plan to fix it. And how that's just stepping back into it. And I thought, oh, thank you, Sherry. Thank you. And thank you, person, for rereading it.
Yeah.
And so where did we go from there? Oh, so then you know, it's like sort of expanding to the place of feeling like, okay, this is not, there's a perspective that started with like, this is bad news,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
then there's kind of moving now into this place of, this is good news, mm-hmm. you know? I'm seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm catching how the conditioning is stepping in to loop me into the next loop.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, this is good. This is what we're here for. This is process!
All right, let's get with it.
And so then the next thing was just so amazing. I had to work with a support person from Apple on a problem in my mail uh-huh. program, and he had me open, I don't know, anyway, my assignment was to write an email, not just that says test in it, but to write an email with a lot of words and send it to one of my own email addresses. So I sit there, and through my fingers, type the most beautiful letter to myself mm-hmm. from the mentor.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I didn't even, it wasn't even an intention. It just came. And it was, you know, all about I don't really want to say what it said because it was wonderful. It was mm-hmm. beautiful. And now I have it and I'm reading it. uh-huh. But I just wanted to share, I mean, there's a whole process that led to the cul-de-sac. But I don't think I've ever looked quite, you know, to see all how ego's right there at the end yeah. of the cul-de-sac to pull me right back into the process that's
yeah.
going to lead back to the cul-de-sac.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, and that despair is a place that really is really usually sucks me into a place that's really, really, it's like quicksand to get out of that.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my gosh, not again, you know.
Yeah.
But I see that that's part of the next process.
Yes.
And there's a way to work with that too.
Exactly.
By just recognizing it for
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah, simply paying attention the way
mm-hmm.
you described as you're going through it, laying it out the way you just did.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing all the little places where it's going to drag you back into it all
mm-hmm.
over again.
And I see one more that happens after that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that really gets me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the place where I go, well, you know, there's just this really great feeling for kind of working through it and being willing to take to go through that and get
uh-huh.
to a place where there's kind of a clarity about the process.
Yes.
And then there's a I don't know if it's a specific personality, but there's someone that goes like this. Oh, good.
Wow.
And then there's just kind of a release of energy, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, now I'll go sit and drink the margarita. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Only in a, from a different, you know, it's like there's somebody who feels done at that place.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, put on the work gloves and we got to keep watching, we got to keep going. Because,
yeah.
you know, it's got lots of cul-de-sacs in my GPS.
That's a good metaphor, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah, it does, because it's like, gosh, I wonder if that's how we get lulled into sleep to get us into the cul-de-sac in the first place. It's
yeah.
like, okay, I've seen through it, great, now I can go back to sleep.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's with the mad margarita or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a metaphor, but it works, you know.
Yes.
It's kind of like the margarita sort of is a way to kind of numb yourself and
mm-hmm.
get to a place of feeling relaxed or whatever.
Yes.
And it's really not the time, because that's
mm-hmm.
the place where the energy is there for really paying attention
mm-hmm.
and for really practicing, and
mm-hmm.
That's not the time to let up.
Yeah, no, it's not the time to let up. It's then the times that we get that let up are the times that we get caught into the whole process again.
Yeah.
You know, where
yeah.
you just get this information and it's like, it's just a beautiful the way you laid it out. I mean, it's the way the whole thing works.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going along, you get a piece of information, the conditioning interprets the information in a way that is like, you've been practicing for so long, when are you ever going to see this? And just goes into straight into despair. And then
mm-hmm.
immediately on the place, you can't stay down in that little pit there forever. So it's like, what can we do to get you back out.
Fix you.
Fix you. Put you
yeah.
on a program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And you've seen that before, and then you luckily had something drop in
mm-hmm.
that reflected that that's
mm-hmm.
what was going on. Oh, that was just conditioning coming in one more time to
mm-hmm.
to step me up.
Yeah, and I think this part about, it's not any words, it's just kind of this feeling of really gratitude that I've seen
mm-hmm.
this, and then,
uh-huh.
you know, it's kind of like, you know,
yeah.
Oh boy, that was really good.
and
there we go, you know,
yeah.
stepping that first foot on the slippery slide.
Yeah, yeah, and I love the way you just said it. It's just like putting on the gloves, the work gloves, and just getting right back into it again. It's like, wait a minute, this is part of it, I'm sure. You know, and just being, just not refusing to go along with it,
mm-hmm.
staying vigilant.
Yeah, because hitting the brick wall at the end of the cul-de-sac is kind of the end of a process, you know. That could be a stopping point, you know, too,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, any of the places could be a stopping point or the
yes.
feeling of an end of a process. And
yes.
And but it's never ending. It's just, you know, there's all, you always need to keep, I always need to keep looking. Paying
yes.
attention and seeing the next place it's going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I opened the door today and there was a cabinet outside, and I was hearing some kind of noise, and I opened the door, and the cabinet door opened and my cat did popped out. You know, and so it's like that. Where is ego? What cabinet door is ego going to pop out of in the middle of your day and just, you know, take you off on some drive
yeah.
to a cul-de-sac.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Roger.
Yeah, I'm that's a good description. Karma cul-de-sac that I'm in right now, and have been for some time. And it's produced a feeling of really high anxiety and stuckness. Mm-hmm. I can't seem to see any way out, or I see too many ways out, and I don't know where to start. And I've been looking at that recently, trying to figure out, well, what, why am I just like a deer in the headlights here? There seem to be so many problems that are in the near future, whether they're global or local or personal. I've got a long list of
checking in twice.
I've been thinking recently, I think one of the reasons I'm stuck is that I enjoy being stuck here. Because right now, if I look at where I am and what I have, and the fact that none of these things have come to pass yet, I seem to be able to enjoy what's here now, thinking this is going to be a hell of a lot worse in the future. The paranoia is giving me a feeling of thanksgiving that I'm not in the future, that I'm right here. But at the same time, there's another aspect of this that's saying, but it can't last. It's temporary. I know what I have to do to prepare and to get out of this and to move, but I just can't seem to do it. But it's been helpful to see why I can't seem to do anything. It is a pleasure in looking at what could be, and what could be looks a heck of a lot worse than what is.
That what could be or would be is a lot worse than what is.
Yeah.
And the attention, whenever it goes to what could be or would be, is where the difficulty is. Because when you turn away from that, then you notice what you actually have, or what actually is right now, and that none of that is actually happening.
Yes.
But, says the voice, that's now. That's not later.
And it's really confusing in terms of the practice, because I think I'm fooling myself into thinking, oh, well, I'm really paying attention, that's why the present seems so good. If I'm looking at what's here, right now.
Mm-hmm. So you're fooling yourself by focusing on what's here right now and seeing how it's pleasant.
But I don't think that's the kind of attention that's really helpful, because it's the kind of attention that's making comparisons. It's caught in a duality. This is good, that's going to be terrible. I'm doing the practice. I realize this is good.
I realize that I think that this is good, and I realize that that is bad.
Yes.
So?
Why aren't I happy?
Why aren't you happy?
So I think I'm not happy because I'm not really paying attention. I think it's kind of a full attention.
A full attention.
Yeah.
Because
it is continually making comparisons.
And is there a comparison going on with your attention too? Like there's a good attention and there's a bad attention? Kind of like there's a good now and a bad future? And how do you know when there's a good attention and a bad attention?
Well, I feel there must be something wrong because I feel so miserable. So I'm looking for what's good and what's bad.
So your attention is going and looking to what is good and what is bad, but it's finding the things that are bad.
It is. And a strange sense, it's delighted with those things.
It's delighted with those things.
At the same time, it's fearful of them. It's delighted because they haven't yet come to pass.
Uh-huh. So that you know that those things are over there. You kind of know where you are, don't you?
I think I know where I am.
Yeah.
But I don't even trust that. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, because who knows what would actually be there if there wasn't, you know, like what you're describing as a scanning between a here, what's happening now, versus a out there, maybe, could be, probably, will be happening.
Mm-hmm. 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 It's not... Yeah, it's not... I guess you're asking these questions, I mean... Can't even think it's not really being in the moment. It's still being out of the moment and making comparisons, and that's fine. Oh no, again.
But you don't. You said you don't know where you are, so.
Okay.
But you're noticing the interplay between the comparisons.
Yes.
That are happening.
Yeah.
Is there more?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Susan.
So as people were talking, and in my own life, I've been looking at, you know, believe nothing. Nothing has to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
The good stuff or the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And the seduction for me is, so I too am in a managerial world at work. And I too can go to the place. I've actually said it to my boss. This place would be, I can't remember what I said, but something like, we wouldn't have survived without me. And I believe it. I mean, that part of me believes it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It would be nothing without me. And I just, if I can laugh at that, and know that that's just a part of me who believes that, and like, but when I really believe it,
mm-hmm.
I'm in trouble. And it's really important for me, as I've watched lately, because I had an experience at work today, last week, that I practiced with. And there's a part of me who wants to, well, you know, feel good about me,
mm-hmm.
about it, and wants to believe that, well, you know, I think it's egocentricity, mm-hmm. you know, wants to believe that life is dependent on it. Depend on me, not on life. Or, you know, in my case, God.
Uh-huh.
You know, so listen to me, not to the moment.
Yes.
It's really important that you turn your attention to me, because I will tell you
mm-hmm.
what is good and what is bad and what is right and what is wrong and what you should say and what you shouldn't say, so that you are safe and everybody likes you. But it's a big fat lie. It's a big fat lie.
Right.
So I've been practicing with turning that over. Well, that may be so, and I'm going to be right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was being right here, and something arose that I had to say that this has avoided saying for a long time.
Because it doesn't make you liked.
Right. It believes it's not going to make me liked. It's not going to be comfortable to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be comfortable because most people identify with egocentricity most of the time. So it's not going to be comfortable to the people who it has externally aligned with, so to speak. I can't even describe it exactly, except that it believes that.
Yes.
But what I've seen is, it never made me successful.
Mm.
Only that which animates me makes me successful.
Mm.
So when I am in the moment, people liking me, it's usually because I'm right here being myself.
Mm.
And then it comes in and takes, makes me believe it's because of it.
Yes.
As far as I can tell. So the thing I looked at this week was an excruciating physical, emotional response to saying, you know, I'm a six. Six is on the Enneagram, fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
We like to mediate. We like things to be comfortable. I don't want to say anything that might rock the boat.
Yeah.
But I had this information that nobody else was looking at. And then I start resenting that nobody else is looking at me. I'm sorry, my role is this person's role. Ah, why do I have to say it? God, please, why? Well, I know why, because I want to say it.
Right.
And so I practice. What I do ego doesn't jump in and take over. I write it down and make sure it's 30 seconds or less, and then I close the old mouth, though. Because what's going to happen to me is this is going to jump in and start trying to make everybody feel better about this piece of information. Handing over. So I watched the backlash of self-hatred after I said the one-liner. And really, I could even actually go to the place of this is not personal. It's not personal to the people I'm saying it to. It's not personal to me. But I watched how that voice inside my head just found its opportunity in the practice of doing something it's not practiced doing.
Because it never will be.
Right. Well, now that's an interesting question, because what I was going to was when I learned to chainsaw at the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, there was just, oh my gosh, I'm a girl. I'm a small girl. What are you doing? No, I don't know how to do this. Look at all these tall, strong guys here.
Get him to do it.
I mean, but after a lot of practice, I could actually do it. And loved doing it, but I'm good enough to go chainsaw. So I was thinking of it in that way, that maybe if I practiced doing something that I'm not practiced doing, that I'll get more practice doing it. I don't know that I actually loved the experience of being in the moment chainsawing with no self-hatred telling me things about myself.
Right.
About how I couldn't and how I shouldn't and how I was doing it wrong.
Because that would be another experience entirely, wouldn't it?
Bliss. So, but it's the practicing with the self-hatred, holding myself, protecting myself, doing it anyway until I can get to the other side that I think I'm sort of in the middle of.
I mean, the way you're describing it, the both things together, this delivering the information and chainsawing and pretty much anything when there's no self-hate associated with it, or when self-hate can be, you know, you're clear about what's going on, then what's possible for you? You know, what's possible for you in anything?
Yeah. It gets a little trickier when my mouth starts moving. I believe. Maybe not. But at the monastery, I told it my first job when I lived here was Watcoing windowsills. And my last job, my last day, was Watcoing these little strips that we put on the window. And I'll tell you, I was in hell the first windowsill I Watcoed. Hell! You know, it's easy, no-thinking job. They give it to you because it's your first day. You're doing it right. Everybody's looking at you, you know, the whole thing. Hell!
Uh-huh.
And then the last day, you know, feeling my arm moving, watching the color go on, the weather's beautiful, who knows the road was. But it's trickier, you know, I say this a lot, it's trickier for me to practice once there's a live body in front of me.
Oh, right, yeah, because
the perception becomes more real.
Yeah, well, you know, conditioned humans are what put all this junk into you, so
right.
Of course you're going to be like...
And they have their stuff, too, it's not just a windowsill.
Right, yeah, the windowsill is not saying anything. It's very clear that the voices are coming from someplace.
Yeah. But it's just a story. You know, as people were talking, and what I've been looking at is it's a story that has a lot of physical sensations that go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can sit like I sit facing a blank wall, not scratching an itch, if I can just sit and breathe, sometimes write it out, which was the case last week, you know, and I told the people I live with, you know, I'm in a bad state. You know, stay away or play on the floor with me or something, but don't talk to me. And I was trying, you know, I was just right, breathing, but it felt so much like me. You know, I can easily hear other people talk and say, well, it's not you. There's nothing wrong. Read the book, you know. Okay, it's fine.
And who was saying this?
You mean in my head?
Was that in your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
In my head. But when I'm in that physical sensation stuck part, when I'm identified.
Yeah, when all that support is not available to you.
Right. And I always kind of think the support is available. It's uh-huh. just that there's so much karma blocking
it. Stuff between you and what's available.
And I can even almost see it's available.
Mm.
In theory, especially being around here long enough, in theory I know it's available.
Mm-hmm.
But the feeling of it, the relief of it, the main relief I had was when I moved deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm in self-hatred, I'm suffering, I believe there's something wrong with me and something wrong with them.
Uh-huh.
Something wrong with the world. That's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, I felt a little better.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't trying to make myself feel better, wasn't trying to get out of it.
Yeah, but at least you actually saw it for what was
saw
going
it.
On.
Saw what was going on, felt it.
Yeah.
Couldn't really find a way out. But there was a moment when I didn't, when it was like, all right, well, I get out of it then. This is what it is. Mm-hmm. When there was a sensation in my body shifted a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's right there. It's kind of like what Cameron
said. Yeah, the practice.
The vigilance, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Watching how's it going to do it now? How's it going to come
yeah.
in now?
Yeah. And the thing I thought about, too, is in the middle of it all, now this was a strange experience. Somebody was calling from deep inside of me, "We are here to end suffering."
Hmm.
It was quoting that over and over to me.
Wow.
It was like, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I'm not alone. There's something inside. We are here to end suffering.
Yes.
You know, now I can't remember the quote, you know, but I was remembering it then because it wasn't me remembering it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are suffering, you know, and it was just saying that like a mantra over
yeah.
and over and over. And I could feel mm-hmm. like myself getting stronger.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not alone. I'm just suffering. That's all it is. Not to take it personally. It's what human beings do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and still practice.
yeah, of course, yeah, because it's different than, you know, walking a stable board, like you said. It's, you know, when you're interacting with people, it becomes real. It becomes
more,
real stuff.
Yeah, it becomes more easy for me to believe it's real.
Uh-huh.
I don't really think it's more real.
Yeah, I
don't, because of the people in the room who were responding to me were not responding the way the story had created the scenario.
Yeah.
They were responding out of their own thing, but not in the way that my story had created.
And you were there to see that.
And I was there to see it.
Yeah, we get this evidence every now and then that they could very well be lying to us. No, the conditioning.
Oh, right.
Oh, they could be too. Well, we don't know what they're doing.
No, the conditioning
is
lying in this case, because they were doing what they were doing. They were
exactly.
having
they will, and they will.
Right.
And so will you.
Yeah. I'm really gonna practice. It's really tricky for me to practice with the people I live with.
Well, you know,
because you know,
they
I
can't throw you out though.
They can't throw you out.
Well, they could.
They could. Yeah.
It would be worth the risk.
It would be worth the risk, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because maybe you're just gonna be like, there's gonna be something that's gonna happen for you where this is your spiritual opportunity. You know, the thing that you mm-hmm. your sixth, you know, any
right.
type tries to avoid could
yeah.
be going headlong at. Well, you might just be delivering bad news
I
left
think
and right.
They would be, or clear news.
Yeah.
That
I was framing it as bad
but
news.
I'll
yeah.
tell you, my Clara would like it. Be a relief to her.
Yeah,
mom. She always says it. Yeah.
Just say it.
Just say it. Because I'll do this thing and then I'll look. So I do this thing with Sophia. Sophia, that's one. Sophia, that's two. Sophia, that's three. She gets to three. She has to go to her room, but I'm a six. Sophia, that's 2.5. Mom! She's on three. She just hit. Oh well. I'll go practice more for that.
Yeah, Clara will be on your side. She'll be there. Yeah, Mom, just say it. Just say it. Thank you. June.
Well, I seem to be in a stewpot. Karma. Let's see, what's in the stew? Well, one thing that's in the stew is duality.
Uh-huh.
Just one pair after another, just swimming around in there.
Uh-huh.
I'm just the worst, and I'm really the best. And that's the big one, you know. And there's just there's a lot of self hate in there, trying to, you know, it's that karma is trying to eat its way in or out. Is it eating its way out? That's an interesting metaphor. old habit, just this big fight with willingness and unwillingness. And huge inadequacy, just a list of shoulds and should nots that's just out the door, and just bunches of stuff. Do this, no, do that instead. Don't do anything. Doing is not what it's about. Sudos in. There you go.
Oh,
don't.
Makes sense. Another end of the map.
And I eat it for breakfast.
Well, it's eating that way out. It's eating its way out.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm in that stupor. There's an I in there who is pretty caught up in it. And, and here's I try to think my way out of it. That's been my path for from day one with this thing. It's when you see something and you feel stuck in it, think your way out of it.
Think your way out of it.
Yeah. Think the right thoughts. Think just have the right awarenesses, and you'll step out of it and you'll feel it.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't work very well. But that doesn't stop me.
Like you said, you've been doing this for...
Yeah.
And is that where you are right now with it all?
I've been sitting here thinking my way out of it.
Thinking your way out of it. What does that look like?
Well, I think it's part of pseudo-zen.
Uh-huh.
It's probably a big part of pseudo-zen.
That if you had the right thoughts, you would be able to be free of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I
remember the right things.
Uh-huh. Remember the right things.
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't meditate more. Don't spend more time with Sangha. Don't take refuge in Bodhidharma or Dharma and Sangha, whatever you do. Think about it.
Think about it. We'll talk to you about how to get out of this.
What's really being helpful to say all of this?
Oh, because you're talking about it all in a place where you're not supposed to be.
I was relating to something earlier, and how I was relating to it. The thing about, well, it was just shared too. I'm great, I'm not so great, and or actually the worst. Actually, I'm
why
the worst?
Why
the worst? And so and in this case, like the what's going on seems to really reinforce it.
Uh-huh.
And what I'd love is to be able to see through all of it. I don't know.
So you're a junior.
I don't know what I want.
You like when you gotta see through. You gotta figure out how this is all happening. So it doesn't happen anymore.
So it doesn't happen anymore. Exactly. That's probably.
It's a big motivator.
Yeah. So maybe I don't even need to share the content. Maybe that's the whole thing. Just that. Well, one thing is that it's from my past,
uh-huh.
which is kind of an interesting. Aspect of it, because it's from my past. Why do I need to think about it? Why have I been thinking about this thing this morning?
Huh.
Yeah, it seems like, or maybe what it is something like something to try to control. Because it has to do with, okay, in this one situation I did a great job. And then in another situation that seemed like the exact same situation, I did a bad job. It was two different jobs, and jobs that I was being paid for. And in the second one, I actually was asked to leave the job. And so, what? It's like, how can we make it happen so that only the first thing happens?
Oh, I see.
And
what happened?
You know, like, and I don't know.
And what happened after that? After you realized that that's what was going on, that you were looking at something that happened in your past, and one circumstance something good happened, another circumstance something bad happened.
What happened when I?
Yeah, when you saw that.
When I saw that. Well, one thing is that I'm seeing that it's something that's, I think it's kind of held over me. And so I need to tiptoe around, or I need to control myself or do something to prevent the thing that was bad from happening again. And where the thing, it's like that thing, it's happening now. You know, like the thing that I don't want to happen is actually happening right now. Because I'm sitting here in a meditation hall thinking about the past. So maybe that's the whole thing.
That the process is right here.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
That you're thinking about something in the past, and that's the thing you don't want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so you're kind of tiptoeing around, trying to avoid this thing that happens that is bad.
Yeah, I think so. Because now I get to also think about the future. How can I avoid that happening again? And what if it happens again?
What if it happens?
Yeah. So.
Do you notice that happening with anything else in your life?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Actually. Yep.
I mean, just as you're describing it, I mean, just like it's perfect. It's the way we were all conditioned, you know. Mm-hmm. Kids are going along, and they're just doing whatever they do. They get feedback that they're doing something bad or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens after that? It's like, uh-oh, I got to watch out for what I'm doing. Because otherwise, I'm going to get into trouble.
Right.
So I don't want to do the thing that's going to get me into trouble. So I have to keep constantly watching myself so I don't do the thing that's going to get me in trouble.
Right.
And if something happens, it's like, I got to try to figure out what happened. It can't be that mom and dad were in a bad mood. It has to be something that I did, you know?
Yeah. And it's possible to for the information all to be helpful.
Uh-huh.
And for there not to be that that small child who receives it over and over again.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. Is that as long as that's who is present, who's experiencing this life, the thing is going to go that way.
Yeah.
And
because the information.
Be suffering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if so now I'm seeing something. I'm not sure how to apply it, but just that. Yeah, the possibility is not to suffer, and also not to suffer over the past.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to suffer over the past, and not to suffer now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It would have been possible. That thing didn't have to be so terrible. Because that, at that time, that was the present. Mm-hmm. And so, which means that there's nothing wrong with all that that happened. It was just an opportunity not to suffer.
Uh-huh.
And so, this present, it's an opportunity not to suffer with what's happening now.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's actually a lesson, not something. Not something to suffer over.
Wow. Yeah. Because when one can have that kind of perspective, it's like anything that whatever throws at you, whether it be life or conditioning, this is just what's here for me to see how I cause myself to suffer, so I can drop that and end suffering. It's an opportunity not to suffer over it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Jen. So interesting, because I was seeing that same theme, at least what I heard in that last conversation through the whole morning, that the suffering can't happen in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot, and it feels like it is. But even it, you know, on the most subtle level, to realize it's happening in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening either, oh, you know, it's like this, I don't want it to be like this, it's always been like this, it's going to be like this, I can't get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's all happening in a conversation.
Yeah.
And that in the, I loved in what, you know, each person was talking about that experience of just dropping down into mm-hmm. what's going on right here in this moment, what's really here,
mm-hmm.
there's no suffering in it.
None.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely okay. Mm-hmm. It's just an experience.
Yeah.
And that it's so, it can be tricky to catch, because so quickly conditioning comes in with, well, but.
Well, but, or, yeah, we saw that, you know, or you saw that.
Yeah.
Good job,
now,
we'll keep doing that.
From now on, we're going to, and then 2 seconds later, the same guy comes around the corner and goes, you're never going to be able to keep that up.
That's right. And off we are, back into the races where, with the moment, there is no suffering.
Yeah.
And that's why I love that vigilance, you know,
yeah.
that mm-hmm. it does what it wants to do. It's just like, okay, got that.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Or you don't understand that.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, that, like the duality people have been mentioning too. It's just so that it can keep the ball in the court.
Yeah, I told you, I was having tennis come through too. I think it was the US Open going on for this. but the image I just got was, so, because for me, I love discussions like this, because I just, what wells up in me is this excitement and determination.
Yeah.
To spend the day being in the moment.
Yep.
And of course, oh, you can just feel it. Conditioning is just getting that, you know, that machine that serves the balls like one after another. You can just feel conditioning getting excited.
Crying it up to 10.
Just having fun, just hitting the ones I hit and missing the ones I miss.
Yeah. That's all there is?
That's all there is.
And that's all we have.
All okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you all.